This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Time. Never speak about the four titles and anything. One game at a time. So competition we play, try and try to win it. So this is what they have to do. No. So it's simple. It's not complication and about that. So one game at a time, and now it's Chelsea semi-finals and prepare Aston Villa, the final against Tottenham, and of course start to think about Paris against Paris Saint-Germain, and yeah, one game at a time. Semi-final Champions League. So semi-final Champions League, so we cannot expect another than tough. So Chelsea is there, so a lot of games there. But so for the second time in our history, we are there with the elite, a real elite for the Europe, and we have time to think about it. Now I don't want to think 1 second about PSG, so I want to celebrate.
On the Ball kicks off now on BFM 89.9.
Pep Guardiola just taking it one game at a time. You're with me, Ross, on the Friday show. Welcome to On the Ball. It's me and my very esteemed, knowledgeable guests. They are Bob Holmes. Hello, Bob.
Hi. I wondered who you were going to introduce then.
Craig Marais is also here. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
And the Friday trio would not be complete without Des Corkill. Hello, Des.
Hello, team. A tired Des, deflated by Liverpool's defeat, and of course the Hillsborough anniversary. But things can only get better.
It has been a tiring week. I'm so sleepy. It's IPL's on as well, but that's a different story. We heard Pep at the start taking it one game at a time, but the quadruple is alive. It is well and truly alive. Dortmund 1, Man City 2. City win 4-2 on aggregate, and yet again, Bob Holmes, that lad, Phil Foden, doing the business.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? Twice now, he's put in the winner when they needed it. I think City, I mean, they deserve to win, let's get that straight. But I think they were a little bit fortunate over the two legs when you look at the key incidents, particularly the first leg when Dortmund were denied a perfectly good goal, which we discussed last week. And then I think they were a bit fortunate to get the penalty for the so-called handball of Emre Can. And that came at a time very early in the second half when you were beginning to wonder whether they were going to score. I mean, they just lost to Leeds last weekend. Aguero was at home. Gezos was on the bench, you know. Where's the goal going to come from for all their dominance? And it came at the right time. I mean, they probably would have won anyway, but I think that was an enormous help to them. And then the Foden goal at the end was a clincher. So, I mean, they're on course. Yes, the quad is there, but they're not totally convincing. I think that loss to Leeds was a reminder of their vulnerabilities, and they're not scoring the goals that they were in their heyday of a couple of years ago, are they? Nowhere near. So I think that is a little bit of a concern for Pep.
Yeah. Jude Bellingham denied a perfectly legitimate goal last week. Got one this week. Not bad for a championship player, Craig Marais.
Yeah. And Pep was in disbelief about his age, in the post-match press conference, you know, and rightly so, you know. I think some of the things he's doing, I mean, you know, 17-year-old, you know, to make that jump up from the championship into, you know, Europe's most prestigious tournament, you know, it is, you know, it's quite remarkable, you know, and there's obviously, you know, it's been about a couple of years, you know, from us, you know, following the English league, we've heard about him, but the rest of the teams in Europe probably wouldn't have. And, you know, and they're getting to see him firsthand and just how good he is. And I think it took him a while, you know. I think if you listen back to Bellingham's post-match press conference, you know, and if you did watch that match against Lazio, you know, he really looked out of his depth. But the improvement that he's made throughout the season, you know, and he didn't always start for Dortmund. He wasn't a first-team regular straight away. You know, he had to fight for his place. He had to prove himself, get up to speed with European football and men's football at that kind of level. In general, and he's done remarkably well. I mean, let's not forget, you know, he's an England international as well. You know, he's featured in the last few squads for Gareth Southgate, and you know, he's an almost certainty to go to the Euros, you know, barring he stays fit. So, yeah, really, really top talent there. And he's only going to get better, you know. I mean, he's nowhere near his prime, and it's scary to think just how good he can be.
All right, I tell you what, more on Dortmund and Jude Bellingham in our video. Check out YouTube, TFIF on video. We cover the Bundesliga, Serie A and La Liga. It's a good one this weekend. Let's move on, because I know Dez is dying to talk about Liverpool 0, Real Madrid 0. They had to win 2-0 to progress. It was a tough one. I don't know, Dez. Is it time for Klopp to break up the ban, do you think?
No, not at all. I think Liverpool were near yet so far. If Salah had an early chance, Salah's the one people are really looking at. But the one for Gini Wijnaldum just before half-time, where he blazed it over the top, that was the big moment. If that goes in, 1-0 at half-time, I think you see a different game in the second half. I think Liverpool deserve credit for taking the game to Madrid. Of course, they had to. You may as well go out. We would have loved to have gone on, but you look, I tell you what, a back central defensive partnership of Nat Phillips and Kabak does not belong in the Champions League semi-finals. And that has been the case throughout. What is encouraging is that the team, I think, is getting their mojo back. Apart from Sadio Mane, Mane has just been afflicted, I'm sure, by illness and COVID and then a lack of confidence. So this season, it's not a write-off because, as we'll talk later on, there's the Champions League to come by. But it's been a very, very difficult defence for Liverpool of their league title. And they've just run into a very powerful Real Madrid, for whom defensively Nacho was superb.
Yeah.
Militao was good. Nacho Fernandez was top draw. Casemiro's a thug in the centre of midfield, but he's a good thug to have on your side. He just shielded those front two. Thibaut Courtois is a giant. I've always been a huge Thibaut Courtois fan. So if Liverpool were to find a way past that barrier, it would have been a sensational result, as it was. The finishing hurt us a little bit, but was lost in the Sabutio Pitch Stadium in Madrid in the first leg.
And Madrid, of course, playing without their two central defenders as well. Varane and Ramos out. But Bob, just a bit more on Liverpool. That front three, Mane, Salah, Firmino, last season it was firing on all cylinders. But even then, when it was firing on all cylinders, Firmino was kind of the creator. But this season, when Mane and Salah don't score as much, you really look at Firmino a bit more and focus on the lack of creativity, the lack of everything.
Yes, but I think we were looking at him last season even. But Klopp stuck by him because the trio was quite a unit. They understood each other very well and it paid off. But he doesn't score many goals for a number nine, does he? And he's faded. But Mane, as Des said, I think Mane has faded more than Firmino even. And they're just relying on Salah. Now, Salah's goal ratio is still pretty good. He's the main man. But I don't think his performances, overall performances, have been as good. I think there's something lacking there. But they don't get many goals, and they didn't even at their peak a year or so ago. Liverpool relied on those front three. They didn't get many goals from midfield. Henderson probably popped in one a year. Wijnaldum doesn't score many. Milner, only penalties. The fullbacks, neither. Not many. Alexander-Arnold, maybe three or four. But they relied very, very heavily on the front three. And they can't do that anymore. And I was surprised, and I think a lot of people were, that Jota didn't start the game.
Yeah.
Because he is a goal scorer. I mean, he slotted in very, very well. He seemed like the perfect guy, could play in any front three position and score from anywhere. And unfortunately, he was injured at a very bad time for Liverpool, coincided with all the centre-backs getting injured. And that upset them, I think, as much as any other injury almost. So, yeah, I think it needs a freshening up rather than a rebuild.
Okay.
I mean, this is still a great team, essentially. The core is there, but I think a bit of freshening up will be welcome.
All right, Liverpool are in league action on Monday night. They're at Elland Road to take on Leeds United, conquerors of Man City last weekend. Chelsea are through to the semi-finals. Chelsea 0, Porto 1. It was an overhead kick of high quality, Craig Moraes, from Taremi. Porto winning on the night. Personally, I would have given Taremi 2 goals and then they would have gone through.
Yeah. But what a finish. He's Iranian, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what a finish. I mean, you're talking those kind of goals, you know, you'd love to see them win ties, you know, and it's just a pity. You know, Porto came into this fixture, and I thought, you know, they're going to give Chelsea a good run, you know, because they'd obviously knocked out Juventus, and they don't have any standout players as such, but, you know, Conceição has got them working. And, you know, they're a good unit. And I was really surprised with the first leg result, you know, a comfortable 2-0 win for Chelsea. But fair play to Porto. You know, they came out, they gave it everything they had. Just missing that bit of quality that, yeah, you know, that you need in the latter stages of the Champions League, you know. But, wow. I mean, like I said, you know, it was one of those goals that I just kept watching over and over again. You know, I just couldn't get enough of it. It reminded me of the Wayne Rooney one against City. You know, it was exactly like that for me. But what a way to go out if you were going to go out, you know, scoring a goal like that. Probably the goal of the tournament.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't disagree with you there. It was just Porto's second away victory in the Champions League knockout stages. They've drawn 6 and lost 13. All right, very quickly, in the Europa League, Man United didn't have many problems against a physical Granada. They won 2-0 on the night, so 4-0 on aggregate. But Arsenal turned up, Des Corkill. It was nicely poised at 1-1. They went to Prague and won 4-0. Now, we spoke briefly about this last week. Lacazette, leading the line, wearing a captain's armband. He turned up with a brace last night.
Yeah, but it's more about Emile Smith Rowe and
the young'uns, isn't it?
Saka. Yeah, the youngsters, because there is a relatively decent base there, particularly in midfield with when Thomas Partey plays. But so there's no Aubameyang, who I can't understand what happened to Aubameyang.
He's got malaria.
In malaria.
But over a period of time, Aubameyang, he's just not the player that they signed. And Lacazette was great guns as well. So I always thought Arsenal should do better, but it's needed these younger players to come in and show Arsenal how it's done. And watching Twitter feed last night, alongside the game, the Arsenal fans were coming out saying, this is the future, this is where we've got to go. They were buzzing, they were absolutely flying about Sacco and Smith Rowe. And they're all saying, I told you so, Arteta, I told you so, Arsenal, we've got to get rid of the old guys. And it was very interesting. Sometimes young players can come in and have a really big impact on the team. We'll see what happens at the weekend when Arsenal stuff up in the league. But but they were terrific last night. That's a difficult contest. The shenanigans before the match, the racism controversy or the racism discussions, whatever you want to call them, before the match, Lacazette facing up to the Prague players who looked to me as though they were in unity with their own player, but it's been perceived as something very different by most of the press that I've read this morning. But it was a fiery start, and Arsenal came out firing, and they were, 3-0 up inside 25 minutes.
Half an hour. Half an hour.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So,
but it's the kids, it's the youngsters.
It is the youngsters. So, Bob, it's now up against their old manager, Unai Emery. It's Arsenal. It's Arsenal Villarreal in the semi-finals.
Well, they give up now, don't they? I mean, this is his competition.
Exactly.
He owns it, doesn't he?
The Unai Emery trophy.
Except at Arsenal.
He knows how to win it, doesn't he? No, I'd just like to add to that, getting back to last night, I was very impressed by Arsenal. I think they were fired up by that situation at the beginning. I mean, the commentator I heard was trying to gloss over it, saying that the Czech players were putting their arms around each other as a symbol of unity for humanity. And I thought, come on, mate, you know, it doesn't look like that to me, not from the expressions on their faces. And I don't think Arsenal's players agreed with him either. They were really fired up. To me, as Des says, that looked very much like sympathy with the ban player, the bad guy, in other words, from his teammates. Mm. And I think that's why Arsenal went at it from the get-go and found themselves 3-0 up after, 20-odd minutes. And well done. I mean, if it takes that to fire up some of those players, I don't know what Arteta's got to do, you know. We don't want him creating racial incidents, but it certainly seemed to work last night. But they were a class above them, weren't they? And it makes you wonder why they struggled in the first game.
All right, in the other semi-final, Man United will reunite with Henrik Mkhitaryan and Chris Smalling as they take on Roma. Champions League semi-final draws, you've got El Clasico. That's PSG against Man City and Real Madrid-Chelsea, the Courtois derby. That's your Champions League and Europa League. We're going for our first break and we will be back talking about the weekend's football.
Has come up with something beyond ordinary. That is a brilliantly elastic save.
This is On The Ball on BFM 89.9. This is On The Ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us, Bob Craig and Des, joining me this Friday evening to look forward to the weekend's football. It's a scattered EPL program this weekend because we've got two FA Cup semi-finals to squeeze in. Tell you all about the big games. First, the Friday night match, or rather 3 a.m. Saturday morning kickoff for us. It's Everton in eighth against Tottenham Hotspur in seventh. Now, Des Corkill, these are two teams who haven't been going great recently. Both harbour hopes of European football next season. And with games running out, neither will want to lose this one.
Exactly. Everton are still serving the hangover from their third championship win of the season. And they've gone five without a win, I think it is, including that defeat by Manchester City.
0-0 last time out.
Right, yeah. Draw at Brighton. So the feel-good factor is just slightly dissipating. This is very important because with the money that's coming on, with Bramley Moore, the stadium being approved, with the feel-good factor around, with Ancelotti being everybody's favourite uncle in Liverpool, it's important that Everton are able to kick on. And I think if they miss out on Europe, it'll pose questions about the whole setup, perhaps. The talk is that the squad isn't deep enough, but the squad's a good squad at Everton. I think they've just disappointed in too many smaller games. You just think of the home defeats. Was it Newcastle going to Goodison and winning? And you can't go and do that if you've got genuine pretensions of being top six. They've spent the money. They've got a decent squad. They've got a world-class manager. They've got money supporting them. You can say exactly the same for Tottenham. But for Everton, their season, I think, is so important for them to finish in the top six. If they don't, interesting times.
Yeah, they'll need Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit and back in the starting 11 this weekend. He missed the goalless draw at Brighton on Monday night. For Tottenham Hotspur, Craig Marais, Jose Mourinho will be desperate to bounce back from last weekend's home loss against Manchester United. There's been a lot of talk about the future of Harry Kane because Tottenham are seventh currently as we speak. They need to win this. They need to appease their star man or he'll go somewhere else in the summer.
Yeah, I actually think it's a bit late for that, to be honest with you. I think, you know, Harry Kane, I think he's, 27, turning 28. He's at that age where he has to be playing Champions League.
He has to leave now.
He has to. And I know he's probably got a few years left on his contract and this and that. But, you know, we know Daniel Levy, you know, as long as he gets a good deal, he'd be willing to sell no matter who it is. And the reality of the situation is, even if they win the League Cup, you know, uh, or, you know, against a Carabao Cup, sorry, against City next week. You know, I don't think it's enough to keep him at the club, because there's someone of Harry Kane's stature and reputation and the quality that he has should not be, you know, restricted to the Europa League and battling to be in the Europa League every season. Now, you need to be up there. He needs to get silverware, you know, as a player. I'm sure he wants to win trophies and he needs that. I mean, there's not going to be a better time to leave than now. You know, he's not going to make this move when he's 30, 31, when his contract's just about due. And I think Levy will probably recognise that as well, because this is the perfect time for them to cash in on him when he's at his peak. He's at a good age. You know, you can get very, very good money for him, whether that's locally or abroad. Ideally, he would not want to sell to you know, what's around him, but, you know, he might be forced to. And I think a lot of this depends on the Haaland transfer, you know, what happens with Erling Haaland. And that will kind of set off, you know, a little merry-go-round within strikers. You spoke about Everton just now, Ross. I think Calvert-Lewin is missing for this match as well. I don't think he's going to be fit.
Abductor problem,
massive blow. But I'm expecting Spurs to bounce back. I'm expecting a response. Like you said, they've received a lot of criticism in this last week, a lot. And no, you'd like to think they're going to bounce back and respond in some way, shape or form. So I can't see anything apart from a Spurs result here.
Spare a thought for Everton's Jean-Philippe Gbarman. He spent, 20 months out, came back last week, made an 11-minute cameo against Crystal Palace. Then he's injured in training and he's out for the rest of the season. So Ancelotti's got some problems to deal with. You add to that Jordan Pickford and all the others as well. But who do you fancy here, Bob? Both teams really needing the 3 points. Who's going to get it, blue or white?
Well, this is like the battle for the wooden spoon among Champions League hopefuls, isn't it? Otherwise known as the Everton Cup. It's an absolute toss-up. This is very difficult to call. It could be 0-0. It could be the worst game of the season. It could be 4-4. I mean, really, not giving much of a preview here. But, it is like that. It could be worth watching, actually. I'm going to watch it. Certainly. Mourinho could be sacked. I don't think Ancelotti could. They won't sack him. But he's got a little bit to prove, I think. It's been, at this point, it's been a slightly disappointing season. Mm. It could still be salvaged with a great run, you know, win about 5 out of the last 6 or 7 games. But I think Everton fans would have been hoping for a top 4 or thereabouts position where it's just about out of reach, isn't it? I think Liverpool have got a better chance and an easier run in than Everton for a start. But Mourinho, I think he's on dodgy ground, actually, because he has not really proved anything this season, has he? I mean, he flattered to deceive. They went to the top of the league and it looked as if, wow, Spurs are back, you know, they can really do something. But he hasn't given Bale a chance and they've got nowhere. And there's rumblings in the dressing room. You don't know whether Harry Kane is actually happy to stay there or not. We have no idea on that one. So anything could happen. And it could be influenced by the outcome of this game, actually. If there's a decisive winner here, it's not looking good for the loser.
All right, the last 4 meetings between Everton and Tottenham have produced 22 goals and Tottenham have scored 14 of them. 3 a.m. kickoff on Saturday, that one. Everton in 8th, Tottenham in 7th. Newcastle in 17th, take on 4th-placed West Ham. Newcastle come into this off the back of a very good 2-1 win over Burnley last Sunday. We were saying at St. Maximin, totally changed the game coming off the bench. West Ham, Des Corkill, come into this one in 4th position. They have a chance of solidifying that with a win. They're doing it without arguably 2 of their best players as well in Declan Rice and Mikel Antonio.
Yeah, but they have Messi, Lingard.
Lingardinho.
So all is good. More importantly, they have Suchek. Everyone's talking about Declan Rice missing, but Suchek has been outstanding all of this season. They're conceding a few goals. What is it? They've won 3-2 against Leicester, 3-2 against Wolves after a 3-3 draw against Arsenal. So they're looking a little bit porous, but their running is very nice. They've got Chelsea coming up in the not too distant future, but they've still got to play Southampton, West Brom, Brighton, Everton and Burnley. You know, there's points, very winnable points there, 12 at least between now and the rest of the season. So if they can beat Newcastle, the realistic prospect of West Ham versus Real Madrid is very much on the cards. And who would have thought that? However, I still feel they're overachieving. I've been saying it since the first couple of weeks of the season. I still think they're overachieving. I think they don't scrape through, but there is going to be an implosion, and I can see it coming towards the end of the season. And it could start at Newcastle, because Newcastle have started drawing games. You take away that Brighton game, they've started getting results. They pulled away from Fulham at the bottom. They'll be feeling a little bit more confident than they were 3 weeks ago, particularly after that Brighton game. And so this could be a tough one for West Ham.
You'd expect Callum Wilson and Sam Maximan to probably start for the Geordies. All right, going into the break, Craig, who do you fancy, Newcastle or West Ham?
I can't go against West Ham, you know, the form that they've been in. And yeah, West Ham for me all day.
I think they're overachieving. No?
Bob, is there a...
You're talking about the top four, and I don't think, you know, considering where West Ham were last season, of course, they're definitely overachieving, but they're playing against Newcastle. And, you know, yeah, I know St. Maximin's back, Wilson's back, but, you know, I think West Ham are just on this run where confidence, you know, whether they have Declan Rice, whether they have the Antonio, it doesn't really matter. And you know, they're just on this wave. But, yeah, I just can't see anything again, apart from a West Ham win.
Bob, Hammers or Geordies? One word.
I'll say Geordies.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
St. Maximin, I think he's come back and he's basically saved the season. I think they're going to stay up now. A week ago, we were saying it was Fulham. Now we're going to stay up, but now it looks as if Newcastle. They've just sneaked these points, and West Brom actually have got a better chance of staying up than Fulham now.
All right, brilliant stuff. We're going into the break. Our second one, stick with us. More right after this.
We wondered if he'd make a difference. So he beats him all ends up, doesn't he?
Stay on the ball on BFM 89.9.
And once more, footballers of all racial backgrounds take a knee to express a united opinion that Black Lives Matter.
On the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Bob Holmes, Des Corkill and Craig Marais joining me this Friday evening to look forward to the EPL and FA Cup weekend. As usual, you can tweet at BFM Radio. You can find us all individually on Twitter. Also follow us on social media, BFM Football on Instagram and on Facebook. And we do have a video out every Friday looking at Spain, Germany and Italy. It's TFIF on video via YouTube. Right, on with the weekend's football. Manchester United in second, Burnley in 16th. It's a Sunday 11 p.m. kickoff. The Red Devils go into this in good form, unbeaten in the last 13 Premier League matches, Craig Marais. But it's well known that United struggle against teams who come in with the low block. But I don't know. It might be different if they change the seats to black covers.
I really don't know what to say about that. I mean, there's a lot of comparison.
That strangeness came one day after an anniversary. I think it's like 20 years.
The Southampton
grey shirts.
The grey kits. Yeah. And the funny thing about that, or what I found particularly weird, was the fact that, you know, it's taken them, you know, three quarters of the season or more to come to that decision.
It's the Red Banners, mate. It's the Red Banners.
I think there must be about five home games left or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I looked at the form straight after I saw that. I looked at the form table, and United are actually third in terms of home form. So it's not that bad. I mean, I think they went through a rough start when they lost to Palace and obviously Spurs and things like that. But yeah, they've obviously picked up since then. It's going to be a tough game. I think Burnley do give everyone apart from City a tough game. But, you know, you expect United. And I think last week's result as well, with City dropping points, very small, but it gives them that small little chance to say, hey, look, you know, we should still keep going here. Yes, there's a bit of a gap between them and Leicester now. But, you know, say, hey, you know, anything can happen here. It's not an easy game for City this weekend as well. They've got Villa. They could potentially
be... Well, no, they're in the FA Cup this weekend.
No, Chelsea,
yeah.
City?
Yeah.
Yeah, the FA Cup, is it?
FA Cup semi-finals this weekend, which we are previewing. Okay. Which you are previewing.
They'll be playing Villa as well. So, I do think that it's going to be, you know, there are points to be dropped for City. And I think United are, you know, will give them that bit of... kind of belief to just keep on this winning momentum that they've got going and see out the season and just see where it takes them. Because, yes, you know, it's definitely over in terms of the title race, but you just always have that small bit of hope that United will have. And I think Ole will be on them.
Oh, yeah. Man United can close the gap to 8 points this weekend, Bob Holmes. And they've got a certain... I mean, if they're going to play teams with a low block, you need top players. And Paul Pogba is playing with a certain bit of swagger these days.
Yes, he has improved, hasn't he? From the moment his agent made his last statement suggesting he was not happy and would probably leave. So I don't know what's gone on there between the two of them. But to his credit, Pogba has put himself about a lot more than he did before that. And I think probably this is his best spell since signing. I would go that far. I think he's more consistent now than he's been. And it's come at the right time. I mean, they're still in two competitions. And I don't think they're not in the title race. I mean, come on now. That's gone. City have got that already. But they're confirmed Champions League next season. And I think they've got a good shout of the Europa League. So it's not a bad season. And he's played his part in it, which I don't think we've been able to say that before, no. Really, in all honesty.
No.
He's always under-delivered, in my opinion. But lately, he's turning it around and it's much needed. But I think, I mean, there's talk. Paul Scholes was on about this in midweek. Why don't they play Pogba and Fernandes in together more? And, you know, there isn't so much link up between the two. These two, they are great players. And I think if they utilize them more, and perhaps another more creative midfielder, rather than playing usually two defensive midfielders, might be worth a try. And certainly in a game like this, Burnley, where you know it's going to be a low block, you know they're going to be stubborn opponents and they're going to need all the creativity they can muster. So that might be, I think Paul Scholes may have a point there.
Yeah. One way of looking at the Mino Raiola thing is he really is a super agent because he got his charge playing so well, so very, very well. I can't wait to read Mino's book. All right, that's a Sunday 11 o'clock game, Man United Burnley. One game we should really talk about is Arsenal 9th against Fulham in 18th. We often use the phrase last chance saloon, Des Corkill. But for Fulham, I mean... this really is it now. If they can do the Gunners, they can maybe look to get out of the bottom three this weekend. No, they can't even get out there. They need a couple of wins. Yeah, I mean, they have to win. No two ways about it. We're talking about Sheffield United being possibly confirmed relegated this weekend. Fulham don't want to join them, surely.
No, they don't. And it might be too little too late because you look at their run of games. After Arsenal, Chelsea. Then they've got Burnley, who I think Burnley are... they're living on the edge, Burnley. They had a couple of wins, which has papered over a lot of cracks. They won at Everton and they won a couple of weeks ago. But I thought Burnley were dropping like a stone. Fulham have then got Southampton. Then they go to Man United. So they have got three huge, huge, huge away games. If they are to do anything, they must beat Arsenal. So which Arsenal will turn up? Will it be the youthful one full of vigour who are able to take on Slavia Prague and punch them in the chin and get a clean sheet, back-to-back clean sheets for Arsenal? Or will it be the Arsenal who like to have their tummies tickled by teams? And Fulham, last chance saloon, you call it quite rightly. They just can't score goals.
Yeah.
That's their problem. For all their pretty build-up play, they've not been able to score goals. And I keep hearing Mitrovic. And to me, he's been one of the biggest disappointments of the season, because he was expected to be able to dominate and score at least double figures of goals. And he's not come close. And Fulham have really suffered as a result. Pretty to watch. Nice to watch. I've liked their football. But yeah, if they win at Arsenal, they've got a chance. Then they've just got to go to Chelsea. No biggie.
The Cottagers have they've lost the last four on the spin. They've beaten Arsenal only three times in 29 Premier League meetings. Looking at the other side of the coin here, Craig Moraes, based on how young Arsenal played on Thursday night, this could be a really good outing for a progressive Arsenal. Do you know what I mean? These might be perfect opponents for them for the Arteta project this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think, it's quite remarkable to see the big difference when Saka and Smith Rowe play, you know, and what they give the team. You know, I thought they were absolutely outstanding last night. They really were. And obviously Smith Rowe was unlucky to have that goal disallowed. But, you know, it's, you know, Saka's had his problems. Smith Rowe has had his problems. And he's come into the team late on. And they haven't played a lot of games together for the senior team. But when they do, you know, Arsenal just seem to look like a different team. They seem to click. And obviously they've played in the youth teams together. So they played together for a number of years. But they're just very direct. They're a lot more clinical. And I just think, you know, Arsenal with Arteta, you know, they're going to build this project around players like this. Tierney, add Tierney into that. There's a good base there for them to do it. However, will Arteta be given that kind of time to do it? Is another question. But, you know, if he sticks to, you know, something close to the lineup that he played against Slavia Prague, you know, I just can't see anything different. You know, I think, you know, it's Arsenal that will be gunning for goals. And they need points to get up the table. You know, I think they've closed the gap considerably from where they were about, you know, 4 months ago. And, you know, it's there to have a respectable finish. You know, they're not going to qualify for Europe unless they win the Europa League. But, you know, I think a good solid end to the season might just, you know, give the board of directors that little bit of confidence to stick with Arteta that little bit longer.
All right. It's a Sunday, 8:30 p.m. kickoff. Liverpool are in action Monday night. We'll talk about that on the Monday show, away at Leeds. We're going into our final break. When we come back, it's the FA Cup semi-finals.
Lovely football. Speed of that little passage of play.
Stay on the ball on BFM 89.9.
A two-goal lead. A picture of a goal. And that should be job done.
Stay on the ball on BFM 89.9.
Back with Bob, Des and Craig. Looking forward to the two big games at Wembley this weekend. I understand 4,000 fans are allowed into the stadiums. So first up will be the big one, Chelsea against Manchester City. Sunday, 12:30, this one kicked off. The Chelsea side, Bob Holmes, that comprehensively lost to City in the Premier League when Frank Lampard was in charge. It's unrecognizable now. Under Thomas Tuchel, they got, what, one defeat in 17 in all competitions. And they're going great. And if you look at the Premier League teams, one team maybe who might be able to give City a game, you might go for Chelsea.
Yes, they can be awkward customers, can't they? Especially under Thomas Tuchel. He's definitely strengthened the defence. But I think you're being a little bit harsh on Frank Lampard there. I mean, he had strengthened the defence even before Tuchel arrived, actually. But I think he strengthened it further. I'll give you that. But Frank Lampard, I don't think, did too bad a job in the circumstances. And I think even when he was sacked, Chelsea were basically saying, this is a bit harsh, but, you know, we think we've got somebody better. So, you know, Frank thought he had a bit more time to bring on the youngsters, and he was doing so. And I think they would have had a reasonable season, but it wasn't good enough for the big man, Abramovich. So Tuchel, he's taken to the club like a duck to water. He's definitely the kind of what they expected, a demanding, strict disciplinarian, and it is no nonsense. And I think probably they thought that as Lampard knew the youngsters, I mean, being a player there, knew them when they were in the youth team and all that, he was a little bit soft with them and probably favoured them. Whereas bringing in a foreign manager of international experience, you know, you're going to have more discipline. And it's worked. But they're still not playing the football that Abramovich wants. They're a tough unit to break down, but there's not a lot of flair. They're not allowed to play with a lot of flair the way he's set them up. And they do have some pretty good players up front. I mean, you know, you've got your Hudson-Odoi in and out of the side. Pulisic and Havertz are now seemingly improving after not starting the season too well. Pulisic was hampered by injuries. Havertz had COVID and found it a little bit difficult to settle, I think. So it's, you know, Chelsea are a threat, but I don't think they're quite in City's class, and I don't think they're in Real Madrid's class either, for that matter, in the Champions League. But they're a good team, and I think they will get fourth place in the league.
All right, Thomas Tuchel's figures or stats: 12 games in charge in the league. Obviously, big loss to Big Sam's West Brom. Defensive unit that's conceded one goal every 8 hours. Multifaceted attack. 13 different goal scorers responsible for their 25 goals so far. That's Chelsea. We've talked them up. But they are, at the end of the day, up against a Man City side going for the quadruple. Des Corkill, I guess the only thing you can say that maybe might help Chelsea is That win in Dortmund would have taken a mental and physical toll on the players. So is Pep going to rotate? What's he going to do?
Even if he does rotate, you look at the quality of the players that he can rotate with, and it's a fabulous group of players that he can introduce. Cancelo didn't play, Fernandinho didn't play, so he can toughen up defensively. Sterling started on the bench and came on, so Sterling can start. And they keep saying that nothing breeds success like success. So if Manchester City are focused one game at a time, they're in the habit of winning. All of their players are in the habit of winning because Guardiola has rotated. He has changed. He got a lot of criticism for rotating for the Leeds United game. So he has tried to rest players as much as possible. I just think they're a remarkable force. I don't understand their tactics because I can't follow them because they're so fluid. False nines galore all over the place. Those midfielders dominating. But they're a remarkable footballing outfit. And they could just have too much for Chelsea, who are resilient, strong, stubborn. But at the end, might be undone by a little bit of Manchester or Kevin De Bruyne brilliance. And if it is De Bruyne who comes on and puts them out, well, I tell you what, that would be the worst mistake that Mourinho ever made, releasing Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, Phil Foden as well, having his best ever season. It's going to be a good one, we say, building it up. Sunday, 12:30, it kicks off semi-final one in this season's FA Cup. It's Chelsea against Manchester City. The other semi-final is Sunday night, or rather early Monday morning. Leicester take on Southampton, 1:30, it kicks off. Neither side head into this Sunday contest on the best of form. Leicester have lost back-to-back league games against Man City and West Ham. Southampton, Craig, were comprehensively schooled by West Brom on Monday. West Brom currently on a two-match winning run. But yeah, I mean, neither have won the FA Cup for a long time. Southampton, 76. I don't think Leicester have ever won it, have they?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, have Leicester ever won it?
No.
Lost four times in the final.
Yeah.
To good teams. This is a potential moment for them.
But Brendan Rodgers is tricky. So he's got a balance top four qualification, which is obviously a massive thing. And obviously you can't give up this gift horse, right? This chance.
Yeah. It's a tough one for him because, yeah, I think I came on, you know, last week and I said that, you know, I don't believe that Leicester will suffer the same fate that they did last season, which was, you know, come off the boil completely and, you know, and kind of ruin all the good work that they've done for majority of the season. However, as you say, you know, they lost the last two league games and it's starting to look that way. I don't think, you know, I fancied them to beat West Ham last week with no Declan Rice and Antonio. I don't think the incident that happened, you know, within Leicester with the three players.
The COVID three.
Yeah, helped them. The COVID three. Because they were big players. I mean, two of them were definitely big players that would have started that match and probably, you know, from an attacking point of view, would have been more of a threat. So I don't think that helped them at all. But I'm led to believe that they're all back in training and that they will feature back in the squad. And I don't think Rodgers can afford to lose players of that kind of quality. I mean, you talk about James Maddison, you're talking about Perez, you know, good players that can, if they're not starting, can come off the bench and make a difference. So, yeah, I think it's a tough one for Rodgers to balance. But he'll look at this and he'll say, look, we're playing Southampton, who haven't been great. I think it's ever since that Liverpool win, actually, funnily enough. You know, they've just been so inconsistent since then. And and like Des said, you know, they will smell this as a chance to go to a final. Let's not talk about winning it, because whoever they play in the final, they're not going to be the favourites for that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a tough final for them, regardless of who they face. But they'll go into this thinking, look, if we get to the final and if we get a top four place, that's massive, massive progress for Brendan Rodgers and Leicester. You know, regardless if they win it or not, you know, it's a big, big chance. And you know, in the finals, one-off matches, anything can happen, as we know. But then again, you know, you see the flip side of that, and Southampton will probably go into it thinking the same thing. It's a semi-final. We've got nothing to lose. Let's just give it all we got. So it's going to be a good match regardless. But you just have to think, you have to look at it and say Leicester have to be massive favourites going into this.
Leicester have not won the cup for more than 5 decades. Oh, no, they've not made the final.
They've never won it.
Yeah, they've not made the final, beg your pardon, for more than 5 decades. Southampton, we said, not a lot to play for in the league. 45 years ago, their FA Cup triumph. I remember it. So sad.
But you're Bob, not that old, are you, Ross?
I am. Who do you fancy in this one, Bob?
Got a feeling Southampton might sneak it, you know.
Same here.
I mean, they've got nothing else to play for. They're not going to go down. They're in a bit of a slump. It's all or nothing, isn't it? And I don't know what the dressing room is like in Leicester at the moment, but if they don't make the top four, people will say it's that COVID party or anti-COVID party by the three players that started the slide. Yeah. For the listeners who are not aware of this, three of the players took part in called an anti-COVID party, if you believe it or not, broke the curfew. Brendan Rodgers found out about it and dropped them. And a weak and sidle duly lost. Three valuable points in a very, very tight race for a top four position. They're restored to training and they will be restored to the side for this game. But you don't know what effect that's had. I mean, I think there's bound to be a feeling among the other players that they let the side down. I don't think, you know, however you look at this, I'm sure the fans will feel that way. So I don't think it's going to be an entirely happy and united dressing room, which makes me think that Southampton have got a chance here.
All right. Nice reasoning, I say. Monday, 1:30 a.m. kickoff, Leicester against Southampton. So Chelsea, Man City is Sunday, 12:30. That's your two FA Cup semi-finals. We're just about out of time, so I'm going to say thanks to Craig Marais.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Bob Holmes.
Thanks, everybody.
And Des Corkill.
And as always, a reminder, Malaysia Super League is on the cards. A little match, Pahang versus Johor later on tonight. Pahang in relegation trouble.
What's their buffer at the moment, Johor?
Johor, they lead by 4 points. Eight games played there.
Eight games played, 4 points. Okay, cool. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back Monday to talk football. Bye now.
Follow BFM Football on Facebook and catch On The Ball on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.